My special guest in the studio tonight was recently compared to the iconic bossa nova singer Bebel Gilberto by Brazil's acclaimed Epoca magazine. She lived for many years in Switzerland and New Zealand prior to moving to Australia. She's now based in Perth. Her career includes performances at many major international festivals, such as the revered Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland. Fresh from her performances this week here in Sydney at the Sydney Opera House and Foundry 616, Juliana Arias, welcome to Now's the Time.
Hello, Frank. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Juliana, can you mark the moment in time that you decided to seriously pursue singing as a career?
Well, I start my artistic career as an actress when I was 13 years old. And by the same time, between my 13th and 17th in São Paulo, the city where I was born, I used to, at the same time as acting, I would go to all bossa nova concerts you could imagine. At the time, we were celebrating 30 years of bossa nova, and was very unusual for people. Now they would see this little girl coming to those concerts. What are you doing here? No, it's how do you know those songs? It was already my passion, but I couldn't. I was not prepared to be a singer at the time yet. To be honest, I felt that the singing career was something so big and so precious, and that I should be no any good to touch that world. I could feel comfortable singing as an actress, but to make that transition was maybe too soon yet. I was a teenager and I felt scared of no. It's a big responsibility. I felt the responsibility. That's what I'm trying to say. At that age, I loved the music, but I was not prepared to just step on the stage as a singer or as a composer. So it took me a few years. In this time of I was a teenager, I could meet some of the bossa nova creators at the time that we were still alive. And that is also inspired me, but also gave me that, again, the sense of responsibility. If I want to do this, I must be good, you know, what I'm trying to do.
So who were those creators of bossa nova that you experienced?
I met Carlinhos Lira, that's still alive, Roberto Menescal. Ronaldo Boscoli was a lyricist of some of the bossa nova, like The Little Boat, Barquinho. I met Tom Jobim in a concert, but I never spoke to Antonio Carlos Jobim. I seen him live, but no, I couldn't at the time, no, talk to him.
You were too young or he was too protected?
I watched him in a big stage in São Paulo. It's in a park, like Central Park, New York. That's the São Paulo Ibirapuera Park, as we call. And it was a concert for thousands and thousands of people. So no, I was not part. I was not allowed to go and talk to him at the time. Who else? That was another guy that is... he's dead already. Johnny Alf, who is dead already, he was one of the precursors of bossa nova. João Donato is still alive. He's almost 80 years old now. I'm trying to remember the other guy, Luizinho Essa. Luizinho Essa was the guy who probably recorded the first version of Masquinada that became famous. Not Sergio Mendes' version. Before Sergio Mendes' version.
Right.
You know, it's not his music. The composer is another guy that's still alive.
Yes.
Jorge Benjó, as we call nowadays. But the first jazzistic version of Masquinada came from Luizinho Essa. And I've really met this guy, and he was like such an inspiration. I feel so glad that I could hear from him, his experience and at the time.
So in your teenage years, tell us about the time when you were coined the term bossa nova baby, or you were named that by the famous Brazilian music historian Ray Castro.
Yes.
Tell us about that story.
Yes. So I was going to those concerts as a teenager and singing all the songs to the point that the production of the concert thought, oh, this girl is a bit unusual. And at the same year, that was for was 1990. He made the book in the end of the year. That was my my Christmas present that I asked for my father at the time. And then a few months later, already in 1991, he was making those night of to autograph his book. It was a new book, and I was this, as I said, 30 years of Bossa Nova, series of concerts for 2 weeks. I was there every day. So by the time when he came to make autographs of his book, the production people were saying, "Ah, there is this girl that you need to meet. This girl, you know, it's unusual. She's here every day and she sings all the song." And so when they come and to introduce me to Rui Castro, I, instead of saying, "I love your book" and everything else that usually people would say to him,
yeah,
I said, "You stole my idea. I want to write this book." And it's true. I was spending time already after school, going to libraries to listen to Bossa Nova and study as much as I could. So I really felt when I now realized someone made the book, I said, "Oh, hold on, this was my idea to write." Of course, I never could do any better than Rui Castro. But then we became friends because of that, because okay, that's unusual. So he gave him a lot of vinyl albums that he was replacing by CDs at the time, and tell me a lot of information how he made the book, and from him that I had the opportunity to meet these people, because he said, then he named it a Bossa Nova Baby. That was a concert called Chega de Saudades that was based in his book, so he gave me like a journalist access. So I was there for the rehearsals and after the show, and now having dinner with my idols.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would introduce me to people. "Oh, this is the Bossa Nova Baby, Juliana."
No, right.
Yeah, so that's how the name came from.
So what you're telling me is that you really came to this music quite organically, and you came to it from a passion.
Yes.
And you learnt the music yourself.
Yes.
Did you go back at some point to formally take music education seriously, or has all this sort of developed just within you instinctively?
In Brazil, never. Never took any classes in Brazil. So as I said, I was an actress that could sing, and eventually, your first question, when I was about 20 years old already, that's when I decided, okay, I will step on stage as a singer, after hearing the opinion of a good friend of mine that I respect very well, that's one of the best singers for me in Brazil. His name is Wagner Dias Gomes. He's one of my friends. And at the time, I said, I'll sing a song in front of Wagner, this guy. If he thinks it's any good, maybe I'll become a singer, but I need his approval to do this.
Because you knew he would be honest with you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And they didn't say, that was amazing, fantastic. They said, you are in tune, Juliana. I didn't know you could sing. So I took that as a, no, right? So that's a good beginning. Maybe I can. Maybe I'm allowed to sing then, coming from him, you know, because he was terrible with people.
Yeah.
So that's how I became a singer. Yeah. So just when I moved to Geneva, I was part of the Jazz Conservatory of Music in Geneva. Then I started to understand a bit more of my voice. I still feel that I should be learning all the time. You know, there are a lot of things in the voice that I'm still discovering. And yeah, but not much training, no, apart from Geneva.
Do you have any instrumentalists that are influences on your voice or on your approach to singing?
In approach to singing, there is a guy that I love very much that is a guitar player called Rafael Rabelo. He's dead already. He was a guitar player in Brazil, also in the 90s. That I like his phrasing. So I do use some of his phrasing in the music. I even adapt some of his instrumental versions of even The Girl from Ipanema. I create a singing version based in his version, not Jobim's version anymore. That I usually say that when I sing is a double tribute to Jobim and to him too, because the way he perceives the song was completely new and lightning for me when I heard.
Uh-huh.
and I like. There is another guy that I like very much, also Brazilian musician, Gilberto Gismonti, that I like very much his music.
Yep.
And is when I listen to instrumental music, Brazilian music, that's the ones guys that I guide me and I listen and yeah, and I learn from too.
Well, we're taking music tonight from the album Bossa Nova Baby. Now, is this your initial album, or?
It is.
It is.
Yes. My own album, I recorded six odd albums for a Brazilian diplomatic and poet called Márcio Katunda. Recording when I was in Geneva, then when he was in Bulgaria, in Portugal, and yeah, about 6 hours around Europe mainly, but not my own music. No, this is my baby, as I call. I was planning to do that in 2000 already. So when I first thought that I could create my own original album, took me 15 years to complete this project.
You've collaborated compositionally on the album. I know the name Doug DeVries, the guitarist,
yes.
And we're about to hear a track jointly co-written by yourself and Glenn Rogers.
Yes.
Called Flesher,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
Which is Arrow.
Yes.
Tell us about this one.
Glenn Rogers is a guitar player from Perth. This song is a fast, what I call a samba jazz, if you wish. That's my definition for the song. Arrow, because the song is dedicated to Rio de Janeiro. Rio de Janeiro, the city, is completing 450 years now in 2015. And the full name of Rio de Janeiro is actually San Sebastian of Rio de Janeiro.
Oh,
right? So
right.
San Sebastian is usually, when you see pictures of San Sebastian, he has arrows in his hand.
Gotcha.
So that's why.
Yes.
And the lyrics would also make mentions of other figures that also arrows, like the Cupid of love, mm-hmm. arrow. I also mention Centaur, the Greek mythological,
the
arrow. And there is also Oshossi in Afro-Brazilian mythology, if you wish.
Okay.
That is the god of the forests, and also with an arrow. So I just create the music using all those images and talking about Rio de Janeiro, about the samba, the clichés. I'm talking about the song about the samba and the carnival and the soccer as a cliché of Rio and an extent of cliché of Brazil, really. And how I battle with those clichés most of the time. But then I found some people from Rio and they are exactly the cliché. Then I said, actually, the cliché is real. You know, I'm from São Paulo, by the way, which also is very, very common, people from São Paulo just think about Rio anyway. But I love Rio, of course. I love Bossa Nova. There's no way you can love Bossa Nova and don't love Rio de Janeiro. All Bossa Nova is related to the city of Rio. You know, it's a love of Rio de Janeiro in song.
The sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's true. So there are actually people that you meet and they are completely the cliché. The cliché is actually true sometimes, you know.
It's a reality.
Yeah, it is. And this is striking, even for me.
Bossa Nova and samba and jazz, and they are musics that are very keenly linked, aren't they?
Yes.
And I was wondering what your thoughts are as to why there is such an assimilation between those musics. Why have they worked so well together?
Yes, in my point of view, Bossa Nova is almost the putting the two things together, samba and jazz. Rhythmically speaks, Bossa Nova is still samba. It's a simplified samba, gentle samba. But it is, if now in a universe of samba, we could say that Bossa Nova is one of the samba styles, as
right.
Partido Alto, as other type of samba carnival, which doesn't sound the same. But still, now the rhythm is samba. We say that Bossa Nova, when João Gilberto created Bossa Nova in the guitar, what he tried to mimic was the tambourine. The little tambourine,
yes. Yep.
Not the big, the little tambourine in samba.
Right.
So the phrasing of the guitar comes from the samba. It's a simplification of samba. Instead of having all the percussions, just the tambourine. Tick, 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 tick.
Yep.
Yeah, so that is the main base of the rhythm. And then jazz with all the harmony and everything that I love. Put together in syncopation. Yeah, samba has a syncopation and jazz too. So there is this sound that's interesting. You know, the rhythm is interesting in both words, then when you put together, yeah, you create a bossa nova that, yeah, a lot of people go, yeah, it's bossa nova has a jazz influence. Of course, there is a jazz influence. There is no doubt about that. And I think the opposite is also true, that jazz after bossa nova also received that influence as receive other influences too. It's the same for bossa nova, as I said. There's the jazz influence, there is the samba influence, and Jobim used to say there is a classical influence too. Mm-hmm. So for Jobim's music, he has this classical influence, and he also brought that to bossa nova. So as any interesting music, I guess, there are all different influences that you put together and you create something new that still has its roots that you can perceive, but is new. It's completely new as a manifestation. And I think that's why it works together, because there is this idea of this mixture, maybe. That's why jazz and bossa nova and the samba, in a way, through bossa nova, maybe, that creates this mixture that is, then you can still mix more and more and more and more and more and endlessly. Yeah.
It's a similar sort of alchemy to what occurred in the 1930s in France with the gypsy music colliding with jazz and creating that gypsy jazz or hot club of Paris sound with Django Reinhardt.
Exactly.
The rhythmic thing driving it.
Yes.
And same sort of thing happened a few decades later with the samba and the jazz.
Exactly, yes, exactly. It's the same thing, which is also delicious. It's another delicious music.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, your new album, Bossa Nova Baby, with a wonderful dialogue between all these styles, the bossa that we've mentioned, the samba, the jazz, but also tango and choro and pop and funk. In what ways has your own life experiences driven the breadth of these sounds that are coming through on this album? Were you conscious of that when you were putting this together, or do you think that's just come naturally as so far as your time living in Europe, your time living in New Zealand, all these different influences and local folk musics that would have affected you from all these parts?
Yes. Yeah, the traveling, as I said, if I would have created this album when I first time I thought about this album in 2000, it would be a completely different album for sure, because I still need all this experience around the world. I still need to live more time in Europe. I still need to live in New Zealand and here. And it would be Bossa Nova Baby in 2000 wouldn't sound like that for sure. I need all those influences, uh-huh. Meeting all those different musicians and different people that inspires you and gives another perspective of life and music, yes, for sure. And there was one of the big dilemmas when finally, was the time of say, okay, let's make this album now. And I need to thank Jeff a lot for this, because when we met, I was already all the time, I've been talking about recording this up for 15 years, and he said, well, why not now? Yeah, okay, yes, why not now? And let's how to make it now. So we did a crowdfunding campaign, and we tried to apply for a grant first before the crowdfunding campaign. We didn't get the grant the first time we tried.
Right.
Then we did the crowdfunding campaign, then we did again the grant, and then we got the grant. I said, okay. But was in my mind, maybe one of the reasons why the album didn't happen before, not just because I didn't make a decision, but was I had a lot, so many options in my mind, so many directions that this album could be, that was too confusing, too many options. Usually it's not something very good to you. It's good to have options, but when you have too many, you can just feel stuck and all right, what?
That's right.
You know?
Trying to filter them through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Distill them down to the core ideas that you set out to originally achieve.
Exactly. So, as I said, there are songs in this album, they were composed still in the process of recording the album, so very new, like Bellas Arts with Doug DeVries was just in the process of recording that we come up with the song. But there are songs that I was, first thought about then when I was a teenager still. And so there are so many and different co-composers too, all around the world, in Brazil, in Europe, and here in New Zealand. And I was totally lost, not knowing, should I record this with the original composers? How they would sound. I want still that original sound when they were composed, But then having the grant from Western Australia also helped me to say, no, you are not there anymore. You've been to all those places, but you are not there. You are here in Perth, making music here in Perth with these amazing musicians. Mm. So this has to be part of now. Is Bossa Nova Babe now? Some songs, yeah, old songs, some new songs,
yep.
But they are completely new in our sense because they'll be recorded now with the musicians you work now.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
The composers, they'll be there anyway, you know?
Uh-huh.
But you'll be a new, everything is new, yeah. And the big part of this project was Pete Jevons, the bass player who make uh-huh. the arrangements with me. So we spent about 6 months intensely together every day, you know, working and developing those songs. So yeah, big clap for Pete. Pete did an amazing job in this album.
Just on that, can you describe the process for you when you are writing a song? Is it the lyrics before the melody, or does it come out hand in hand, or how does it actually work in this case?
All the ways.
Always.
So, yeah. Some songs, they come as a sentence. Someone says something or I think something and this clicks, and then the melody comes from this the lyrics first.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the opposite way. Someone just give me a song. And I'll say, okay. Sometimes I ask the co-composer, do you know what is this about? And sometimes I'll do right from that perspective already.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Or sometimes, no, don't completely, no, black canvas, and I'll do whatever I want with the song. So, yeah, both ways,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I know some songwriters who work and rework the bones of their material over long periods of time, even in some cases over years and
yes.
years. Does the art of composing come easy to you, and do you feel as though that you need to go back and rework or refine, or you know, when it comes out, is it the spontaneity?
I think again the two ways. Some of the songs they are okay. They are what they are from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Some of them, they are unfinished for years until you go back to them. Some of them, you never go back. They stay unfinished.
Yeah.
You know, it's not straight away.
Yes.
Again, Jobim used to say about this composition too, that composing is 10% inspiration and 90% hard work. You know, So it's not like a magic. Sometimes it is, yes, can be,
uh-huh.
But yeah, if you want to do that.
You're about to leave our shores for a little sojourn into Europe. You're heading to performances in Amsterdam and also in London. Just briefly describe that mini tour that you're about to embark upon.
Yes, we'll be doing a concert in a theatre in Amsterdam called the Muganga Theatre. And it's amazing how Europe is receiving well this album. We did promote the album like in Facebook and this kind of thing that everybody does, now putting your music page in Facebook. And then some people, radio guys from Europe, start to ask me, can you send me the CD? We want to play this. And from this, in Amsterdam especially, was the way. So we were going to Europe. Jeffrey is an artist and he has a conference in Europe. And from that moment, say, okay, Jeff's going to a conference, so let's try to make some gigs from this.
And you're performing at Ronnie Scott's in London.
Yes, yes.
Well, that'll be quite incredible, won't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this guy in Amsterdam, I just sent him an email, okay, do you know places where we could do a concert? Here he gave me a list of places and musicians to play and everything, and he's helping to promote the gig there even. And in London too, we're going to play with a long time musician that I know since I was in Brazil, was the first person I ever played in my life, Carlos Franco, and all the musicians over there too. So you'll be, two of the songs in this album was composed with Carlos Franco, Missão and Como Vai. So you'll be after, I don't know, so many years, more than 20 years that we haven't played together.
A reunion,
yes,
wow.
At Ronnie Scott, yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Night in Takapuna. And Juliana, just briefly, tell us a little bit about this one. Pete Jarvis was a joint composer.
Yes, this was a song, one of the songs that took a long time to, I needed Pete to finish. It's about Takapuna, is a beach in New Zealand, close to Auckland. I lived in Auckland for 7 years before moving to Perth. And always being there, the song, as you're going to hear, always being that snow introduction, and the lyrics was there, the melody was there, even the chords, they were there, everything was ready, but I still needed Pete to let's change a bit here and there, mm-hmm. And I said, yes, now it is completely red. And it's the only song in English in the whole album, or the whole album is Portuguese, but this one, because was, I don't know, even because it was made in English, there's no explanation. Even the lyrics never was in Portuguese before, always being in English. So, and I thought that to be great to have one in English and the album too.
Juliana, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.